That's good.
And welcome back to the History on the Rocks podcast. This is your host, Cody. Of course, joining me, my lovely wife, Audrey, is here.
Hello, everybody.
Okay, well, we did an episode last week.
We did.
When we got back from Canada, right?
We did.
Okay. I'm a little thrown off this morning. How was our weekend? What did we do? We didn't do much this weekend.
I know. We didn't really have
any
plans.
Breakfast beers.
Breakfast beer. I mean, it's almost noon on a Wednesday.
It is 11:33 a.m. on a Wednesday, and we are drinking what?
I have a glass of Savvy B.
Busch Light.
From Prairie State Winery in Genoa. Their Prairie White, I think, is the one. They have a State White and a Prairie White. Prairie State Winery. I think it's the Prairie White. It's a really pretty bottle with sunflowers on it.
Yeah, I saw it in the fridge. That's pretty cool.
That's why I like that one.
Yeah. Prairie State Winery is, I've never been there.
It's really good. Their food, they have a smaller kind of menu, like shareables, sandwiches, and flatbreads. I've had one of the sandwiches. It was delicious. And I was actually there on Monday with some coworkers, and I got their flatbread, one of them. The sausage one. It was really, really good.
Yeah, it's a. Do we still have a gift card to there, or did you use that?
I used it when I went with Kendall.
Yeah, we'll have to go up there sometime though. I know I'm not big into wine or anything, but
yeah, they don't like have a bar. Like it's just wine.
It's just wine. Well, maybe that's a place for you to hang out.
Well, there's also a cruise in.
Yeah, there. Well,
in downtown Genoa.
Yeah, it's not the same cruise in it though, as I don't think. In
Shirley said it is.
Oh, it is? So it's owned by the same people?
I think so.
Interesting.
Maybe. That's not right, but I don't know. Like, it feels like it would be the same.
Yeah.
And then there's this other bar that we were actually going to go to on Monday after the winery, and their sign said open, and there was a lady sitting there, but the door was locked.
Oh.
And Shirley was kind of upset because she wanted this beer that's on tap there.
Maybe something happened and they had to close, or...
Yeah, we weren't really sure, so that's why we ended up at Cruisin'.
Oh.
I don't know, it's this Bitch Slap wine. I mean, beer.
Bitch Slap. I've actually heard of that before. I've never had it, but I've heard of Bitch Slap before.
Yeah, and they have it on tap at this bar here in Genoa, and she really wanted it, but couldn't do it.
People name beer some crazy things. There's a lot of funny, craft beer names out there. I should compile a list, and we should go through them on an episode.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, Bitch Slap is one. I can't think of some off the top of my head right now, but I've seen craft beers that are just, like, ridiculously named.
For sure.
And,
you could probably go through our random-ass beers in this beer fridge and find some interesting names.
I don't think there's any, like, that extravagant in there, but they do have some cool names.
The beers in there are dwindling, too, which probably all of them should go, because they're probably all expired, because I grabbed a couple expired ones.
Yeah, 2022 and 2023.
Yeah, no, we're
we,
done
what was
those.
That, the Lakefront Brewery?
Yeah.
Yeah. The
I was like, which one of these would I drink?
They had a Kolsch and an Amber, and we opened up the Kolsch, and it was sour as hell.
Yeah.
That was disgusting.
It wasn't very good.
Ugh.
But, oh well.
Yeah, Kolsch should never taste like that, because Kolsch is one of my favorite types of German beers, and it's supposed to be crisp and, like, full of, like, taste, and that was straight, like, skunk sour.
Yeah, I took a sip of it, and I'm like, I don't think I like this. Cody, can you try it? And he said it wasn't good.
No,
so.
Thank you. No, thank you. Well, let's get into our episode today.
Sounds good.
We are going to start with Korea, and then we're going to talk about one of my favorite periods of American history, and I said on a previous podcast that we would get to that topic because although the American Revolution and the American War for Independence are two of my favorite topics in U.S. history, I want to talk about Benedict Arnold because I don't think he is highlighted as much as, you know, people know of, you know, the Founding Fathers and things like that. So that's going to be our second story today. But first, we're going to go over to the Peninsula of Korea and talk about kind of the political downfall of Korea in a historical event. By the way, I forgot to say this. This is Historic Betrayals Part 2.
All right.
So we're talking about two betrayals here that kind of, this one about Korea really had an impact on their history and what Korea is today. And then Benedict Arnold, just a shocking story back from the American War of Independence. So I'm going to ask you, what do you know about Korea today as someone who isn't like versed in history or like geography, right?
Yeah.
But like we know Korea hangs off as a peninsula off of China, mm-hmm. right? And it's in that East Asian corridor, which is a very powerful corridor of the world, right? So someone who isn't, for people that are listening that aren't as nerdy like me or, you know, not
completely
as keen on these
not
topics
knowledgeable.
As you, what do you know about current day Korea?
Really, I would say the only thing I know is that North Korea is not somewhere you want to go.
Okay, and it's a dictatorship.
It's a dictatorship,
under
yes.
Kim Jong-un. And so you said there's North Korea and there's South Korea, right? So
yes.
It's a divided country.
Yep.
Very tense place. The 38th parallel there is a demilitarized zone. And if you go to YouTube,
mm-hmm.
you can look up all these videos of people that have visited the border from the South Korean side.
Mm-hmm.
Even when Donald Trump was president, he is the first American
yeah.
president in recent times
to go
to step over the demilitarized line into North Korea, which I don't care what your politics are, right? But that is a power move by an American president
yeah, for sure.
to enter the dictatorship of Kim Jong-un and his country just to step over the line. Like, that is a power move because there have been times people have stepped over that line and they've been taken prisoner. By the North Koreans, because that country is so politically messed up and the people are so brainwashed.
Yeah, for sure.
Into believing like Kim Jong-un is this like god figure.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an author that says it the best. Like, all you would have to do to free the North Korean people is to drop a bunch of cell phones with internet in the country, an airdrop, and let them look at the internet for a day and they would probably turn.
Because they just don't have like access to those things.
The people are so brainwashed and they don't have any idea what's going on in the outside world. All they mm-hmm. believe is that America is evil,
yeah.
right? That capitalism is evil, Europe is evil. And that is really ironic because if you look up like Kim Jong-un, some of his favorite things are American. Coca-Cola, yeah. Mickey Mouse. Like yeah. some of his favorite things are American established, you know, corporations mm-hmm. and content and you know, entertainment.
Capitalism.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And but the people inside North Korea, they are, like I said, so brainwashed and they don't know what's really happening in the outside world. They are so so much propaganda goes through North Korea mm-hmm. into believing that they're this powerful country and whatnot. And it's just not the case.
Yeah.
They're really the evil of the world. And people that have escaped North Korea and come to the United States have spoken publicly about it. Whether it's on college campuses or to our own government, about how life is in North Korea. And like I said, you can YouTube these. I'm not making this up. YouTube them. You can see all these videos, and it's just astounding, like, how underdeveloped that country is and, like, how scary they actually are on the international stage.
Yeah. So it's one, like, landmass. But, like, what's the difference in size? Is there more South
they're
Korea
about,
than there is North Korea?
No, they're about even. They're it's
like
broke. It's just like when back during Vietnam, North and South Vietnam were broken up and it's split in half.
Okay.
So Korea is the same way. The 38th parallel cuts Korea in half and they established North Korea, obviously, a dictatorship, and South Korea, which is a capitalistic democracy.
And
like
is
the United States and one of our close allies.
Is this story that we're going to talk about how that got divided or no, it has nothing to do
no,
with that?
No, it actually has nothing to do with that because that would be the Korean War, which my grandfather, Grandpa Billick, his flag
yeah.
I have the triangle flag there from when my grandpa served in Korea. That's when the country was split in half, was
okay.
during the Cold War in the 1950s after World War II. So we're not actually going to talk about that, but what we are going to talk about is how Korea became so weak that it came to that point later in the 1900s that it was able to be split in two because their politics were so disrupted from this betrayal and this event that we're going to talk about here.
Alrighty.
So the overthrow, we're going to talk about the overthrow of King Gojong of Korea in 1895. So just before the turn of the century there into the 1900s. Like I said, this is going to set the base for the future of Korea in the next 100 years mm-hmm. throughout the 1900s and up to today. This incident is known as the Olmi incident or the Olmi Sebyeon. And it's a pivotal event in Korean history. It involves the assassination of Queen Min, also known as Empress Myeongseong. And she is King Gojong's wife. And this was done by Japanese agents, which ultimately leads to this significant political turmoil and the weakening of what is known as the Joseon dynasty and their royal authority in Korea. So this assassination of his wife gives a lot of power to the Japanese and their influence in that mm-hmm. region, because you have Russia, you have China, and you have Japan.
Yep.
And you have this small country of Korea, right, who relies on this having allies
yep.
to survive in this geographic location. So, like I said, the Japanese being involved in this, and they have Korean conspirators as well who are against this dynasty, this really puts this the political state of Korea in turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the Joseon dynasty? This was the dynasty that Korea had. Korea was under the Joseon dynasty rule. And King Gojong is their 26th king. This dynasty had been in power since 1392.
That's a really long time.
500 years of this dynasty.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a lot of power.
That is.
That's a very powerful dynasty to last for 500 years and not be overthrown or changed.
Mm-hmm.
Most dynasties only last, I think 100 to 150 years, depending.
Yeah.
Sometimes 50 years, and that's overthrown. But 500 years of the Joseon dynasty. Now, in the late 19th century, where we're talking about 1895, Korea was caught between the competing interests of China, Japan, and Russia. I just kind of commented on that a minute ago. And the country was looking to maintain its sovereignty, even though they have these growing foreign pressures.
Mm-hmm.
So you have China, which is ginormous,
yep.
and you're connected to them. You share a border with China.
Mm-hmm.
So even today, like, Chinese and North Korean influence they're tight. Like, they are, you have communist China and you have a dictatorial totalitarian state in Kim Jong-un and the dictatorship of North Korea, and they are very tight.
Yeah.
And then you have a democratic capitalistic South Korea right there, and that's why they're under so much duress
yeah,
constantly.
For sure.
And you have China, who's a big force, right? Many
large.
Dynasties throughout China, very strong country. Russia, a large country with a lot of assets, a lot of resources.
But on the side, just a comment, on that side of Russia, though, there's not a lot of population.
Correct. It's mostly indigenous population, but again, mm-hmm. because you're so close to the landmass, you still
yeah.
have a lot of influence.
For sure.
You know what I mean? And then Japan. Japan's a very strong empire.
Yeah.
For hundreds and hundreds of years, if not thousands, right?
And what kind of government do they have?
An emperor, it's like a monarchy.
Okay.
Having an emperor is just a king.
So more similar to South Korea, though, than North Korea and China?
Are you talking about today? Or are you talking about what we're talking about here?
I guess both.
Okay, well, today, Japan is a democratic society.
So, like, South?
Yes, like okay. South Korea today. But the time period we're talking about, there's only one Korea. There's not
yeah,
a North
yeah, there's
Korea.
Yeah, it's not divided.
But Japan is an empire until the end of World War II when we defeat them.
Yeah, okay.
So, in this time, what we're talking about, Japan is a very powerful empire.
Mm-hmm.
And being an island in the Pacific like that,
mm-hmm.
they also have a lot of resources, even though they're kind of, isolated.
Yeah.
They want to have influence on Korea because that's a mainland country that they can make use of,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And obviously, Japan and China has a long history of being enemies. So they want to take Korea away from Chinese influence.
Okay.
Because that would be, if China and Korea are, allies.
Teaming up.
that takes Korea away from Japan, one of their closest neighbors. So that's the foreign influence that we're talking about. Now we have Queen Min, or Empress Myeongseung. She is very powerful and influential in the Korean court, so in Korean politics. So within the monarchy of the king, her husband, she has a lot of power and influence of how things work. And she's very strongly opposed to Japanese influence at the time and favors closer ties to Russia to counterbalance Japan's power in the late 1800s. So you could see right off the bat here that she already is making Japan kind of an enemy of the state for Korea through her influence. And she is pressuring the Korean public with this policy to pretty much make Japan an enemy.
Okay.
So how does Japanese influence rise in this area? So following the first Sino-Japanese War, which lasted from 1894 to 1895, it was only a year long. It was a quick one. Japanese influence in Korea increased. So Japanese used their military power to gain Korean influence, or to take Korean, you know, friendship, pretty much, for lack of a better term. I'm trying to think of words here, and like on the fly.
Words aren't
like,
coming.
Wait a minute, the words are not coming to my head. But yes, the Japanese influence over Korea increases after the first Sino-Japanese War. And the Treaty of Shimonoseki is signed in 1895, which ended Chinese influence over Korea. So the Japanese were successful in kind of pushing out the Chinese influence in Korea.
So she kind of failed. Queen Min failed at...
Well, this is before her assassination.
Oh.
So she hasn't really failed yet. It's just that this war... The Japanese had so much power that they were able to push out the Chinese from Korea.
Okay.
But yeah, she's still on the side of we don't want Japan.
Yeah.
And that's what leads to this power vacuum in that Japan really wanted to fill. Because without China, right, Korea is now kind of autonomous. They don't have influence.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's time for someone to step in, a bigger country who has military power, political power, economic power, right?
Yep.
And now there's competition over having that influence on Korea.
For sure.
Okay?
Yep.
So on October 8th of 1895, a group of Japanese agents and Korean collaborators infiltrate the Gyeongbokgung Palace, where the king and queen live, and they brutally assassinate Queen Min. They mutilate her body, so cut her apart, and burn it to prevent proper identification.
Dang.
Obviously back in
overkill.
We watch a lot of Criminal Minds. We've been watching it all summer.
Just watched an episode about that last night.
Yeah.
Not
the
dismembering,
The Devil's Night episode with burning people alive. Obviously back then, you don't have modern technology,
DNA and all
dental
that.
Records, things like that. So by burning her to complete beyond recognition, right? It's easy to say, like, oh, she just went missing. This isn't her.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. But again, this is kind of the Japanese and Korean coup against the king and queen and the dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
And with this assassination of King Gojong's wife, he starts to become weak in his political power. Because remember, she was very influential.
Yeah.
And he's a very powerful figure, but without her, right, he doesn't have this team to influence different groups of people throughout Korea.
Yeah.
So he loses this political power that he once had with his wife, and he becomes very vulnerable to Japanese manipulation. Now, in 1896, King Gojong and his crown prince fled to the Russian legation in Seoul, which is South Korea today, for protection against the Japanese. This event is known as the Korean Royal Refuge, and it lasted for about a year and symbolized Korea's desperate attempts to seek support against Japanese aggressions. So they're using Russia as a powerful country to pretty much fend off the Japanese because of how powerful the Japanese are as an empire.
Yeah.
The Umi incident marks a significant step in Japan's increasing control over Korea and expanding into the mainland of East Asia, which leads to the full annexation of Korea by Japan in 1910. And that's a really important part because Korea being annexed now is under Japanese control. It's like us in Puerto Rico, right? Puerto Rico is its own country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it is tied to the American government.
Yeah.
And it has its economic impact also impacts the United States.
Okay.
By Japan annexing Korea, they are making it a part of Japan.
So, like, in that example, so if something were to happen in Puerto Rico where they need the government to be involved, let's say the FBI, like, that's our government. They don't have their own government,
they're
not a state.
They have their own government.
Okay.
They have their own government, their own constitution. However, this is where it kind of gets complicated, right?
Mm-hmm.
Puerto Rico has sovereignty. It is autonomous in its government.
Meaning it has its own.
Correct. But it's influenced heavily with American government. They use our economic system.
Yeah, like our
They're
dollar.
Represented in our politics. Their politicians and our politicians work very closely together.
Okay.
Okay. So, yes, they're not a state, but they're considered a territory in which our influence on Puerto Rico is very large, and that Puerto mm-hmm. Rico conducts its government like a state.
Okay. So that's what this is as well.
Exactly. So Korea at this time is conducting its government and its policies to fit what Japan wants. So now mm-hmm. Japan annexing Korea, they now have a geographical territory which now borders their biggest enemy of the region, which is China.
Yeah. Okay.
So you see how significant that can be
for sure
for Japanese to expand their influence in East Asia,
mm-hmm.
because that's what World War II is really all about. And during World War II, we step in because Japan is starting to take over, kind of like Hitler wants to take over Europe.
Mm-hmm.
The Emperor of Japan during World War II wanted to take over Eastern Asia and South Asia. So that's why during World War II, we felt the need to step in and stop that, because it wasn't just Hitler in Europe mm-hmm. trying to, you know, take the Third Reich and expand it over Europe. It was also the Emperor of Japan who was doing the same thing, but in Asia.
Okay.
But this is one of the first steps towards that in Japanese power, right?
Yeah.
Annexing Korea and being so close to your biggest enemy mm-hmm. that you can now use Korea as a mainland base for your military, mm-hmm. your economy, and your politics.
Makes sense.
There is international reaction. The assassination of Queen Min and subsequent events drew international condemnation and highlighted the intense geopolitical struggles in East Asia. So the international community is now starting to pay attention mm-hmm. to what Japan is doing. Before this event here, there wasn't much focus on East Asia, right? Like, the Americans during this time were not focused on Asia really at all.
Yeah.
It's not until Richard Nixon that, you know, in the 1960s that we actually had a president go to China
mm-hmm.
and have a relationship with China. Back then, we're really not even paying attention to this.
We're not involved.
No, but not until World War II are we really going to step in and stop the Japanese assault on East Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see how this event really has an impact during this time period. So this is the end of Korean sovereignty. In the aftermath of this, the incident is a critical moment that erodes the Korean Empire and their dynasty. And it sets the stage for Japan's colonization of Korea, like we just said. So the annexing of Korea now gives Japan a colony mm-hmm. that they get all the resources, their economies are tied, all that kind of stuff. Now, Queen Min becomes a symbol of Korean resistance against foreign domination, and her assassination is remembered as a tragic and defining moment in Korean history, as we're seeing today still.
Yeah.
Through World War II, through the Korean War, and the 38th parallel being established and splitting that country up, it's had very rough political times in the last 130 years. The overthrow of King Gojong and the assassination of Queen Min represent this complex interplay of internal and external forces that shaped the late Joseon dynasty and ultimately led to Korea's loss of independence in the early 20th century.
Hmm.
So that loss of independence and that autonomy as a nation, I mean, you can see how that impacts a country.
For sure.
If you are so influenced by outside powers, it's led to total destruction of the Korean peninsula. And even today, North Korea is one of the biggest threats, I think, to the entire world. Maybe except for China and Russia, because obviously they have similar political strategies and enemies in us, the United States.
And China and Russia are just so much larger than North Korea.
Correct. So it's kind of easy to for a nation like North Korea to kind of suck themselves into the power vacuum of China and modern-day Russia.
Yeah.
All right. Now let's nerd out.
Benedict Arnold.
So when we talk about the American Revolution, right, and the American War of Independence, what are some names that come to mind? Come on. What's the biggest name of the American Revolution and American War of Independence?
I don't know where I'm going with it.
He's on our $1 bill.
Okay, George Washington.
Thank you.
Okay, I was going to say that, but then I was like, I don't know. Okay, yeah.
George Washington. Right. Paul Revere. Right? Revere and his Midnight Ride.
Going on the horse.
Ben Franklin. John Jay. James Madison. Thomas Jefferson.
They all signed.
Oh, boy. Okay.
History is, it's been a long, long time since I took a history class.
If you know anything about American history and the founding of our country and the war, the American War of Independence, you've probably heard of Benedict Arnold. And the Benedict Arnold affair happens in 1780 and is a very actual infamous episode of American history. But I don't think people talk about it as much when they talk about the American War of Independence and its impact on that.
Well, I'm not shocking, but other than you, name doesn't sound familiar.
Benedict Arnold's role and this ultimate betrayal almost changed the course of the war, which is very kind of scary as an American to think about, that we might not have gained our independence because of this betrayal. Now, Benedict Arnold was a general in the Continental Army during the American Revolutionary War. He was a hero for his roles in capturing Fort Ticonderoga in 1775 and his contributions to the American victory at the Battle of Saratoga in 1777. Two big battles there and two geographically important places for the Americans and the colonists' victory in this war. But as history shows, Benedict felt he was not sufficiently recognized for his achievements and became increasingly disillusioned with the American cause. So basically because he didn't get credit, like George Washington was getting as the lead general, because George Washington and Benedict Arnold worked very closely together at the beginning of the American War of Independence. They were like really good friends.
Okay.
Two high-ranking generals, right?
Yeah.
And he was very jealous, I think, because he was living in Washington's shadow. George Washington was the go-to guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was the brains of the Continental Army. And I think Benedict Arnold felt kind of like the little brother, right?
Yeah.
Like Big brother's getting all the attention.
I'm doing good things too, but not enough credit.
Exactly. So by 1780, Arnold decided to switch sides and secretly negotiate with the British. His primary contact was a very famous British major named John Andre, and he was the British spy chief. Arnold's plan involved surrendering West Point, a strategic fort on the Hudson River, to the British. Control of West Point would have given the British a significant advantage and potentially changed the war's outcome. Now, West Point today is our West Point Academy, where is Army.
Yes.
Right? So that's how significant that fort is in American history, is that today it is the military academy where our commissioned officers are educated and trained. Now, in September of 1780, Arnold meets with Andre to finalize the plans of this takeover. However, before that could happen, Andre is captured by American forces while returning to the British lines. Papers found on Andre expose Benedict Arnold's plot to change sides and hand over West Point. Upon learning of Andre's capture, Benedict Arnold fled to a British ship, and he leaves his wife and children behind in the colonies.
Hmm.
Now, Arnold is commissioned as a brigadier general in the British Army and led many raids against American forces. So, although he switched sides,
yeah.
He's actually demoted from general to brigadier general.
Mm-hmm.
But he takes that, and he lives the remainder of his life between Britain and Canada, dying in London in 1801. John Andre, despite efforts to save his life, was hanged as a spy by the Americans on October 2nd, 1780. And the American reaction to this is that Benedict Arnold is a betrayal, and it absolutely shocked the American public and military because he is such a highly renowned general.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Washington, people know who he is. He's a very prominent figure in the American public and in the military. It's kind of like if one of our 4-star generals today, let's say in the Middle East, like flipped to like a terrorist organization.
Yeah.
Like that's how
ISIS.
Scary. That's how scary this moment is for Americans.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a big deal.
So Benedict Arnold becomes synonymous with the word treason in American history. And I talked about this on a previous episode. Like, even today, he is a byword for betrayal in the United States. If you talk to historians, like, in just conversation,
mm-hmm.
or, like, some people who like history, like me,
yeah.
right? If someone betrayed me, or if someone, even jokingly, like, even if my friend did something that, you know, wasn't a big deal, mm-hmm. and it went against, like, me or like a situation, you know what I'm trying to say? I could be like, all right, Benedict.
Okay.
Like you just switch sides on me.
Yeah.
You know?
See, I've never heard that one.
Or like you can call someone a Benedict Arnold because like, let's say they betrayed your friendship or something like that. Or like, oh, they're a real Benedict Arnold.
Huh.
So yeah, I know you've never heard it, but I've definitely heard it kind of like in TV shows and things like that. Or you can use it in just modern conversation because this betrayal is so well known amongst people who really like
history.
it becomes, you know, you call someone a Benedict Arnold, they know they've committed some betrayal or treason in that matter.
Interesting.
So the Benedict Arnold affair underscores the fragile nature of loyalties during the Revolutionary War and highlighted the vulnerabilities of the American cause because you had loyalists to the British crown
mm-hmm.
and you had the patriots, those who were trying to fight. And there were a lot of loyalists that switched sides and also patriots that switched sides.
Yeah.
Because they were afraid that Britain was going to destroy the American army and that, mm-hmm. you know, they wanted to be loyal if that happened because then they wouldn't be seen as a traitor or mm-hmm. potentially be killed or, you know, their life would be kind of over if that would have happened.
Yeah.
So despite Arnold's military prowess, like we said, his name is forever tarnished by his act of treason. And the incident also reinforced the importance of intelligence and counterintelligence in warfare. So spying,
mm-hmm.
which is really important, right? Because you have intelligence, you have the information that you bring in to combat your enemies.
Yep.
But then you have counterintelligence, which is basically trying to find out what they know about you.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the Benedict Arnold thing, right? Is that he knows all this stuff about the Continental Army. He knows George Washington. He mm-hmm. knows his maneuvers. He knows all these secrets. And now he's giving them to the British.
Yep.
Well, now George Washington and the American military have to counter or
figure something out.
Yeah, they have to do counterintelligence to find out what do Benedict Arnold tell them.
Yeah.
That now we have to change our ways.
Change your plan.
So that they're not 2 steps ahead of us, that we're still 2 steps ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one thing that a lot of our military studies is these types of betrayals and, you know, switching of sides, especially American allegiance to a foreign adversary or an enemy. We know of Russian spies back in the Cold War, things like that, to where they are giving away American secrets and that we have to either you know, we have to act quickly to protect those secrets or act differently.
Yeah.
So that those secrets aren't exposed and we're, you know, we're in trouble then. So.
For sure.
All right. But those are our two betrayals for this week. I like both of these. They both, you know, the first one definitely changes the course of Korea and a whole nation and two nations actually now, right? So some history people might not know about Korea and kind of their downfall is actually before World War II, not after World War II. And then secondly, Benedict Arnold, like you said, you've never heard of his name.
Nope.
And to me, he's one of the, you know, biggest names in the American Revolution and something that I think most people who know American history have heard that name before. But for our listeners who don't know anything about it, there you go.
Like me, who knows?
Well, that's the whole point of the show, right?
Nothing about U.S. history.
We're just trying to spread lesser-known historical facts.
So U.S. history was how many years ago?
I don't know.
We're going on 15 years out of high school. So 17 years ago, I took U.S. history. I don't remember what I learned, and I don't think I had to take any kind of history class other than like an art history class, which was boring, and I never paid attention in that class in college. So
I took an art history class at Harper.
Been a hot minute since I learned any of this stuff.
I took a Renaissance art history class at Harper, which is our community college back home, and I think I fell asleep in it multiple times because it was so boring.
Yeah. The history class, or art history, or whatever art type of class, it was definitely historical, but Michelle was in that class with me, so we got in trouble for talking a lot.
Sure you did.
I mean, not in trouble, but we were noticed, and then we would just start passing notes.
Ladies, be quiet.
I don't care about this stuff. I'm taking this class because I have to.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode on Historic Betrayals Part 2. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Go see some friends, family, get some drinks in, relax. Summer's almost over. It's coming to an end quickly. We only have a couple more weeks till we go back to school.
I don't wanna.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
But we still
three weeks from tomorrow, students start.
Yeah.
So like 2.5 weeks till we go back.
Yeah, we go back that Monday.
I don't wanna.
Yeah, I know.
But it's fine.
We hope you all enjoy your weekend.
Have a good one.
Go relax out there. And we'll talk to you next week for another episode on the History of the Rocks podcast.
That's all I got. Cheers.
Cheers.